is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast. I am James Seltzer coming to you live from the WIP studios. Usually, I get to look in this guy's face, look in his eyes when I'm talking to him, and to really, really know how he's feeling and what he's saying. But today, he wanted to be on so bad that he was willing to do it over the phone for us. Just back from Chicago. I think he might still be drunk. Let's find out. The one and only Mr. Jack Fritz. Fritzy!
You wanted to look in my eyes just like the Cade Kapler should do with the Phillies players and stop using these analytics, right?
That's what I hear, Jack. That's what I hear.
I was in Chicago, so... Listen, let me preface this whole podcast by saying that I watched some of the Phillies, but, like, honestly, you got to understand that it was my bachelor party. I didn't have to watch the Phillies. I watched most of the games. I tried my best. I was at the game on Thursday in Chicago. I was chirping, even though the Phillies lost. And, yeah, my hangover just kicked just in time for this podcast. So it's going to be a good one. I feel energized. Like, sometimes, like, now that I'm older, like, I started to realize that hangovers last longer. Like, when I was in college, they never really affected me. Now, it's like, wow, that was a lot. Now I'm good. We're good. Yeah. We are back from Chicago. We are heading to work. Excited to, get back on track.
Jack, you're talking to a 36-year-old. You don't even know what a hangover is, all right? At your age, I could go for weeks straight, no problem. And now it is literally, I'm out for days at a time after a night of drinking. So
yeah,
enjoy it while you got it.
It was 72 hours of just drinking. So I think it would knock out anyone. So
well, back in the day, I would have been able to handle it. Not as much anymore. I'd still try, though. That's where I'm at. I'll try. I know the pain's coming, but I'll try anyway. Speaking of pain, I don't think you missed too much over the weekend. Though I do, later on, we're going to get your review of Wrigley Field. As a baseball man himself, first experience going to Wrigley Field, I definitely want to hear about that. But
can I just say that I didn't stop smiling the whole time?
That's what I would hope. I mean, that should be the reaction for any baseball fan going to Wrigley for the first time. But more important things to talk about, Jack, is people are starting to panic a little bit. I'm starting to get that feeling today on WIP. We're getting into the whole Gabe Kapler's too positive. I'm tired of the positivity when this team's getting their ass kicked. Rough weekend for the team. They bounced back, salvaged the series with the 4-3 win yesterday, but not so great on Friday and Saturday. 12-3, 12-4, or vice versa. Flip those around. Didn't matter. The Brewers were putting up runs. Been a bit of a slide. 4-11 over the last 15 games. The month of June, as we expected it to be tough, off to a 2-7 start. It hasn't gone so well. Where are you at right now from a macro perspective with this Phillies team? Are you worried? How concerned are you? All that type of stuff.
Well, like, I don't want to say... Like, I knew there was going to be regression, even when they were playing really well, just because, like, I didn't think the staff was that great. I didn't expect the hitting to be as bad as it is. And I'll tell you what, it's the bullpen is really starting to show some cracks. Like, obviously, Sir Anthony is amazing, but outside of Sir Anthony, I don't think I can trust anyone else in a big spot. Like, I think they all have – the weird thing is that they all have great stuff. They all have great stuff. Adam Morgan is a legit 97 from the left side with a really good slider. And Jason Hayward, who hasn't caught up to a fastball in 7 years, catches up to a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. It was unbelievable. So, like, it just feels like they're not as good as their early record was suggesting. I also don't think they're as bad as this. But the offense has been in a funk for over a month now. And it's starting to get legitimately concerning. And they're not even like it feels more like a chore to watch the Phillies right now than it did in the last couple of months. Like right now, I'm just like this team is so like frustrating to watch on a night in night out basis. I'm not completely jumping off the bandwagon, but I think it's fair to be super super kind of infuriated at how this team's playing. It feels like there's no emotion. It feels like they're just kind of going through the motions. Listen, me, you, and John are all pro-Dubel, hashtag pro-Dubel. His batting average has dropped like 80 points for the last month.
It's like 280s now. He's in the 280s. He was batting 361, Jack.
He looks different. It looks like he's, and this is what happens with the Dubel, is like sometimes he just doesn't look fully engaged, and I'm worried that we're going through one of those spells now where he doesn't look fully engaged. I understand the positivity thing from Catholic. I can understand where that's frustrating from a fan base as they're watching his teams get their doors blown in on a night-in, night-out basis. But I don't have a huge problem with it. I just want to make sure there is some kind of some guy that can drop the hammer when the hammer needs to be dropped. And maybe that's Rob Thompson. Maybe that's someone else on the staff. I'm fine with Kapler being that way with the media because, like, the players don't really benefit much from getting bombarded in the media. That just kind of kills the locker room. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. But behind closed doors, I need him laying the hammer down on some players because, like, it's right now is just unacceptable.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and I literally the same way with the Kapler stuff in the sense that I don't care at all what he says to the media. He's clearly a positive guy. He brings a positive mentality to meeting with the media. Who cares? It doesn't bother me at all. I understand when you see your team give up 12 runs on back-to-back days, you want to see the manager come out and be fired up and be angry about it and not just have this, you know. I think the problem is he'll come out and he'll start a press conference off with, well, it was a hell of a sixth inning. I thought we really looked good playing. Stuff where it's like, dude, you got slammed today. Bring the reality of what happened. So I understand where they're coming from, but at the same time, I don't care at all. In general, I like Kapler's approach from a public, what he's talked to the media. For the most part, I've liked what he's had to say, the way he's responded to criticism. I think all that's been positive.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, I don't think players are dumb. And being in a locker room, like, this is going to sound so whatever, but like my freshman year at Bloomsburg, we were bad. And we were just like, we were questioning certain things and we'd see these things and then, you know, we would talk amongst ourselves. So it's kind of naive to say that players like don't understand. Like players understand when players suck. Like our sophomore year at Bloom, the pitching staff was unbelievable and the hitting was terrible. So like our coach pulled to the side all the pitchers and he was like, "Listen, I know that right now you guys are shoving and the hitters aren't really backing it up. Just stick with us. Don't try to make this a pitchers versus hitters kind of thing." Players aren't dumb is my point. And I understand like the whole media thing. Like, it's fine. I just want to make sure that behind closed doors, it's not just like la-di-da. It's okay. Like, I don't know.
Well, that's the key. That's the key. And that's kind of what I was saying as well is that I'm fine with his public approach. Behind closed doors, it has to be different. You know, you can't be going into the locker room and saying, "Hey, you know, great at bat in the sixth inning when you lost 12-4 or 12-3 or whatever." I'm with you. I think that my point being that as long as what we're seeing him say to the media and that type of mentality, as long as it's different behind closed doors and when he needs to get fiery, he can, then it's not as much of an issue to me. It's if the guy that's talking to the media after the game is also the guy who's addressing the team after the game. That's a bigger issue for me. And like you said, maybe it is someone like Rob Thompson or someone else who brings the hammer and they do a good cop, bad cop type of thing. That works too, but I agree. Either way, the hammer has to be brought down on these guys. And Arrieta tried to do it, obviously, in a public forum. Maybe not the best way to go about it, but you understand where he's coming from. As a veteran guy calling out a team that needs to be called out. Like you said, man, they have just not played with the same type of fire and the same type of aggressiveness and all that type of stuff that they have to bring. This team isn't going to score runs unless they're being aggressive on the base pass, unless they're taking that extra base, doing all that type of stuff. And to your Odubel point, look, he's always been this type of guy, right? He's always been someone who's had amazing highs, amazing hot streaks, and then amazing lows at the same time. So I don't think it's that surprising, but at the same time, like you said, they need to do something about it, and you could see the precipitous decline, especially when this offense really was relying on only Odubel Herrera up until now. You need that guy to come through, and when he's struggling, it just it emphasizes how much the offense as a whole has struggled. One positive, though, and we talked a lot about it when they lost him, and not just the importance of the bat in the lineup, but of the leadership on the team, Rhys Hoskins' return. Is the return of Rhys Hoskins alone enough to turn this offense around, Jack?
Well, I think the Rhys Hoskins thing, it just makes them deeper and lets guys settle into a role. And even though he was struggling, he was still a presence. And I think it just kind of lets everyone take a big sigh of relief. I mean, when he was out of the lineup in San Francisco, they scored one run, and it was by a pitcher who hit a home run. And it just feels like when you have a guy like Reese that you can rely on, he's been a leader everywhere he's been. I just think that even if he's not fully performing, it just lets everyone else kind of take a deep breath. So, yeah, I think it'll definitely help. And I just want to say one more thing on the Kapler thing that I just thought about while driving. Like, the positivity thing kind of, it may make guys become complacent and not push as hard because they know that they can just, that he'll be still be positive. Like, think about when you would have a substitute teacher in class. And, I mean, I know that was, what, like 30 years for you ago? But
very, very, like, very good. Thank you. Very good.
When you have a
substitute I need a little rim shot, a little bump. Very well done.
When you have a substitute teacher, you know, they can't really do it. They have no really power. The power is taken away from the teacher. And it just feels like maybe they're, when there's so much positivity, they just feel like they can get away with more. And there's no one really being held accountable. There's no accountability. And I want to make sure there's actual accountability because it seems like they're a very undisciplined team. They're a pretty dumb team.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. I just want to make sure that there's some kind of accountability. And I think that's where Arrieta.
That's what he said, right? I mean, that's that quote unquote. That's what he said. I think you're dead on with that. I think Arrieta was calling out for accountability from top to bottom, as he said. And I think we went so far as to say, if there isn't, I'll make sure there is. And part of that is why we were so pro Arrieta's comments in the sense that I think you're dead on, Jack. This is a young team. This is a team that needs to know that certain things are not okay, that you have to be accountable for your actions. And I think you make a great point. Look, we don't know one way or the other if that's really what's happening behind closed doors, but if Kapler is this relentlessly positive guy at all times and struggles to criticize, then yeah, I think that could be a real issue because there, again, no accountability if you're not being taken to task for the mistakes you're making. So,
and the defense thing, like, I know guys are playing out of position, but like there's been like,
no, it's been, you're right. You mentioned it. It's sloppiness. It's mistakes. It's not covering bases. It's being in the wrong position. All that type of stuff that has to stop.
Like sometimes like manager just has to ream out a team. Like, and if you ream out a team in private, obviously in private, guys kind of just like nut up a little bit. And the Phillies have needed to nut up for like a month now.
Yeah.
And there's been nothing. The defense is still sloppy. Now I think J.P. Crawford being back has kind of just like, I don't know, maybe just me watching, but the defense looks way better with Crawford out there. He's just so much more smooth and like looks like a natural out there. But like the mental mistakes are piling up, and like the mental mistakes are that's something that every player can personally deal with. Like mental mistakes are personal. Physical mistakes kind of just happen sometimes. Mental mistakes are inexcusable. Like that's just not being in a game. That's not being focused. And when they come to the dugout and Gabe's like, hey man, it's all right. Like it's okay. Like still not a bad throw, man. Or like something like that.
Right.
It doesn't really help the player. You know?
I agree with you. Well, especially when you look at this team that they need to do that little stuff to win games. You know,
yep.
We've seen that. You know, whether it's taking the extra base, whether it's just sound fielding, all that type of stuff, they can't afford to give up runs. This team doesn't hit well enough. They haven't done enough from an offensive perspective to give away any runs, and they give away runs, it seems like, every night. So I think that's a great point. On the Kapler thing as a whole, though, I'm really happy with the way he handles player issues in the media. I think it is the right move by him to not openly criticize guys in the public unless they need a kick in the butt. But I think we're getting to that point where you can only continue to do the same thing in the same public, you know, public excuses, whatever you want to use. You can only do it for so long before it starts to just sound like BS. And I think that for a lot of Phillies fans, that's starting to be where we're getting to, which also, you know, if you take a step back, this team is 33-30 right now. You look at last season, take a guess when they won their 33rd game last year, Jack.
Like June 30th?
July 21st. July 21st. It is now June the 11th. So at the same time, and you've said this a lot, I love that fans are upset about this because it means that they care again. they care about this team again, and it had been a long time since people were invested on in the day-to-day actions of this Phillies team. So I think that's a really positive thing. But with that comes more scrutiny and more, you know, more of this type of stuff. So again, I'm happy people are back, but I also want them to have the perspective that is necessary in the sense that this is still a really young team. 33-30 is a pretty damn good record for them right now. And they're headed into in the midst of the toughest part of their schedule all season long. So they just need to find a way to maintain. You know, they need to keep their water level where it is at. As Jack Fritz says, it'll always find its level. They just need to stay level right now. They just need to find their way through June, and then they can make some games up. We always see it every year, right? You want to be the hot team in September. That's the formula for making a run, is be that hot team that wins a wild card in September. Right now, it's not as big a deal if they're struggling. The issue is they could fall way out. If they continue on this path, we're at 2-7 in June, and it only gets harder. The Rockies coming to town. We'll get to that. But then they've got the Brewers again, the best record in the National League. The Cardinals, a wild card team right now. The Nationals in first place again. Then the Yankees, the best record in baseball right there with the Red Sox. And then back to the Nationals. So it's getting harder, not easier, Jack. How do you feel about this team right now? Is this the type of thing where you think we're going to look back at the end of June and say, all right, they made it through that gauntlet and now they just got to start winning some games? Or is it the possibility that come July 1st, we're like, well, they're out of it now?
Well, I just don't know how, they're going to win games unless they get really good starting pitching during this run, because the offense has just been, it's been that bad. And like, I understand the whole record 33-30 thing, and that's great. Like, it's fine that they're a good baseball team, but they haven't played well in over a month, or it feels like it's been a month. They've been beating up on bad opponents. So I think a lot of Phillies fans are looking at this team as, well, their record's not really, you know, it's not what they're really playing as. They're not really playing like a 33-30 team. The record's great, and I'm happy that they're in it, but to me, it just doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel that they're 33-30, because they feel like a bad baseball team right now. And it's the defense, it's the pitching, it's the hitting, it's the bullpen. So, like, if we can start seeing some signs of life, I might start saying, like, hey, you know, they'll still be in it. But I just can't. If they play like how they've been playing, and I don't think they will, they're going to be out of the race. Like, they just are. You're playing against some of the best teams in the league that have more talent than you, and you're making dumb mistakes on top of that. So unless they can start turning things around on offense, and some of the stuff Maley's teaching can figure it out, and Reese can get back to where he was hitting, and Doolittle can get him back focused, yeah, but I can't say right now definitively that I think they're going to be in the race when this whole run's over, because they're playing a bunch of good teams. They're not playing like a good team. And the pitching staff isn't carrying them. And frankly, it's with Velasquez and Eflin, who you never know what you're going to get on a night-in-night-out basis. I think Pivetta, Nola, and Arrieta are going to be pretty good. You can pretty much rely on those guys. But then, I don't know. And the bullpen's become a problem, even though they're all talented. I don't know. I'm pretty frustrated with where this team is at.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are, especially, and I think maybe doing so well early on and getting to, you know, close to 10 games above 500, being in first place at one point, maybe has kind of gotten people a little bit unrealistic with what this team actually was in the first place. So right. I think you make a really good point there. Personally, again, I think this next week or so against the Rockies, a team coming in where they need to take advantage of playing the Rockies right now. They're the worst team on the schedule for the rest of this month. And if they can't take advantage of the Rockies, then I'm going to be really, you know, starting to really doubt what this team. And again, this is a series in June. So it's one of those things where it's really tough to overreact too much, because we know what baseball is. And I've seen it so many times where a 500 team goes into the month of July and that team ends up 15 games above 500 by the end of the season. So you can see that. You could see how the season could head that way. But I think right now, when you look at the youth, the way they've played, and I think you hit on the really important thing is it would be a lot easier to accept it if they weren't killing themselves, if they weren't playing sloppy baseball. If, again, like, how many times do we have to see someone not covering a base at this point? People get so mad at Kapler about the pitching changes or the shifts. They should be getting mad at him about the fundamentals. If you want to rip Kapler, rip your team for not having a guy cover third and Chris Bryant could just take third base because there's no one there. That's the type of stuff that I get angry about from a coaching perspective, the type of stuff that they need to do a much better job about. Again, going back to that earlier point, they can't afford it. They can't keep doing these things if they want to win games, especially against the best teams. Jack, you brought up the bullpen. I wanted to hit on that real quickly because that has been something that for a while there we felt was something we could really count on because of the talent you've mentioned. And we've seen a lot of these guys pitch well for the majority of the season, but it's starting to be a problem the last few weeks. The Sir Anthony of it all obviously has been by far the best arm in the pen, but it's created a situation where you almost feel like there's no one else you can count on right now except Sir Anthony, and it's putting him into situations where 41 pitches, I mean, and I was fine with him bringing him in there, but that's a lot of pitches, you know, and then you don't have him. And granted, you have an off day today, but are we getting to the point where you're starting to worry about how Sir Anthony is being used and his ability to maintain over the course of the season if he's going to be used like this? And then a follow-up to that being, you know, the bullpen as a whole, there's no closer right now. There's no one you feel good about in that role. And again, you know, Gabe resorting to the one-out saves again, and that was the right move to bring Hunter in there. But the bullpen as a whole, something we used to count on, where are you at right now?
Well, let me just start. Let's talk about Sir Anthony for like 5 seconds.
Because the only 5 seconds.
I think the MLB allowing him to throw a 91-mile-an-hour changeup coming off of a 99-mile-an-hour cutter should be illegal. I think they should really look into it and maybe ban him from throwing a changeup because it's just unfair. And I feel bad for the hitters. And it's just like, I don't know how you're going to hit this guy if he's throwing a 91-mile-an-hour changeup. Like, it's just, it's bad for baseball for him being this good. And I think the MLB should really consider not letting him throw a changeup. Sound good?
Yeah, I think that's a fair deal. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but I like the thought. I like that you're looking out for everybody like that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, yeah. I'm just looking for the pace of play. I want to make sure that the hitters have a chance because they just don't have a chance to be throwing a 91-mile-an-hour changeup.
It's a really fair point, man. It's a fair point.
Yeah, thank you. He is really good. But they are throwing him a lot, and they're using him a lot. And, I mean, they have to use him because he's their best bullpen piece.
It feels like only bullpen piece.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing is that I think Tommy Hunter's starting to round into shape. I know that everyone was just crapping on Tommy Hunter when he's coming off the DL. I think he's starting to turn into someone they can trust more and more. I know that, like, for some Phillies fans, they just can't believe that. But he's a good pitcher. He's been a good pitcher. He's going to be fine.
Yeah, the history of Tommy Hunter says that he will figure this out.
Yeah. So, not worried about him. I think he's starting to figure it out. I think he's really tough against lefties and with that cutter in. But anyway, besides him, like, I don't know. I don't think there's anyone that's coming into a ball game where I'm like, all right, they've got this. Like, he's fine. I mean, Edebry, a little bit. Luis Garcia, no. Adam Morgan, I wish, but I can't see that either.
What happened to Adam Morgan? I mean, I felt great about him the vast majority of the season, and now, you know, you clench your cheeks when he comes into a game.
But he should be good. Like, I don't understand how he's bad. Like, he's throwing 97 with a wipeout slider. I don't get it.
I don't either. You're the pitching expert, Fritz.
I think he's throwing too many four seams. I wish his fastball doesn't really move, and I know it's like lefty on lefty, so it should theoretically just work, but clearly it didn't when Jason Hayward, who again hasn't caught to a fastball in 7 years, can park 97 from the left side out. Like, that's clearly a problem. That's not on pitching. That's on you, Adam Morgan. I don't know. The bullpen, it's just like, it's not good. I don't trust them. They continuously crap on their legs in big moments. And I think that's where I've been more frustrated with the whole run right now. It's like they've had chances in big moments and big games to show teams that they're legit,
yep.
And they've continuously crapped on their leg.
Yep.
The example number one being in Chicago with the Luis Garcia, or the home run of Jason Hayward, and then the next game after that, just uncompetitive again.
Yeah, and so we saw it before, that the Hector Neris blowing that save, they come back to beat Scherzer, that was a game against the Nationals, you take that series if you win it. We've seen it over and over and over again this series, or this season.
They've blown at least four games.
Yep.
That they should have won.
Well, Neris has blown three, and Morgan blew that one, so that's four alone.
Yeah. So, like, that's why I don't feel as good about this team either, is that when they've had a chance to rise to the occasion, they just crapped on their leg. They don't look like they're ready for a big stage, big moment on the road. Like, that's the mark of a good team. Let's bring up the Eagles for a second. Like, the Eagles, Doug's first year, they were terrible on the road, and they looked like they didn't know what they were doing on the road. Second year, the moment I started believing that they were a legit Super Bowl contending team was when they went down to Carolina and won that game in a tough road environment on national TV. The Phillies right now have been in L.A. and Chicago and against the Nationals and have had a chance to take series, and they have crapped down their leg. So, I don't know. I'm very frustrated. I'm really mad at this team. Like, I just want them to be better.
Yeah, I can tell, man. And it's coming through, and I think that you're speaking what a lot of Phillies fans are feeling right now. Like, especially for a fan base that was just starting to get back into this team. And granted, you know, some of us were around the whole time, but I understand if you know, they've been a bad product for the last few years. So people are finally starting to get excited, starting to get interested. And it's frustrating when you lose games like that. It's frustrating when you have games that are won, that are over. You're up 7-5 in the ninth, or excuse me, 5-3 in the ninth. You lose it 7-5. Like, that shouldn't happen. It is incredibly frustrating, especially when potentially the worst left-handed hitter in baseball is going yard and a grand slam off the lefty. So I'm with you in a macro sense there. I think that, again, to go back to that point, I think that we might be slightly harsh, too harsh on this team because for those reasons. I think a lot of people were excited to be back in, and they start losing games, and we forget it's a young team. It's a first-year manager. It is all that type of stuff, and I think ultimately, you know, maybe not as talented offensively as we thought, or at least not ready to be. I still believe in a lot of the guys who are struggling long-term. You know, I'm not out on Kingery. I'm not out on Crawford. I'm not out on any of those guys, but I do.
Can we talk about the freaking? There's a weird narrative out there right now that, like, the Carlos Santana signing was like a bad signing, and like I don't understand, like, why Carlos Santana is being like the scapegoat for this entire thing. Like, Carlos Santana is putting up the stats that he's always put up. Like, he's batting .230 with a .365 OBP. He was batting 180 a month ago, and he's been batting in the 300s in all of May. Like, where is this anti-Carlos Santana, like, major bust signing narrative coming from? Like, we get three calls a night saying, man, they shouldn't have signed Santana. I'm just like, why? He's been one of their best offensive players and a team that can't hit. And, like, what's the problem with Carlos Santana? Because Williams isn't getting enough at bat, or they haven't figured out the outfield? Like, I'm sorry.
It's because they're ruining Rhys Hoskins, putting him in left field, Jack. You didn't know that? It's going to ruin his career.
Like, Rhys Hoskins had 1,000 OPS his first month of the season playing left field. I think he's fine from the hitting perspective, the hitting side of things. And, like, the fact that people are bringing up Nick Williams as an honest answer as to why they should have signed Carlos Santana, I just think that's so stupid.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And look, we've been big Carlos Santana supporters on this show for the most part, just saying, hey, he'll get to where he always does, and we're seeing that he's getting there. The last month plus, he's hit like the guy you expect him to be. The power hasn't been quite there as much as you would like it to be, but no one on the team has really been bringing it from that perspective. But look, I'm with you. I think that a lot of people had penciled Rhys Hoskins as the future first baseman of the Phillies in their minds. And then they move into left field, and people just overreact. People take that way too seriously. That's going to mess up his development or something. Left field's the easiest position on the field to play. They're asking him to do less out there. He has to worry less about defense. And granted, it's not his natural position, so whatever. I'm with you 100% on that. I think that's part of the reason that people are so against the Santana move. And I think it's also that, you know, he's the highest paid guy on the team from an offensive perspective. I think people expect more from him. I don't think people knew what type of hitter Carlos Santana was either. I think they expect him to be this, you know, middle of the lineup monster who's going to hit 35-40 homers. That's not who he is. He's never been that guy. He's a guy who gets on base a lot. That's the type of hitter he is, and he'll get you some big hits when you need him. But I think the people have kind of expected things from Carlos Santana that he's not going to bring, and he was never going to bring. But I think when you look at this offense, I mean, imagine where they would be without Carlos Santana right now. You want Altair and Nick Williams playing every day? Because I don't. They certainly haven't looked like they should be from that perspective. And I understand on a general level the argument of, hey, this team isn't going to win the World Series. Play the young guys. Get development. Get reps. And I, as a general principle, I'm all for, if young guys are going to be in the major leagues, play them every day. Get them those reps. Get them to where they need to be. But I think that's only if you think Nick Williams is a long-term answer on this team. I know you don't, Jack. So I think that people are misunderstanding the what they're trying to do long-term, and also maybe putting a little too much belief in guys who might not deserve that belief. Either way, Carlos Santana, in my mind, a necessary part of this offense.
Well, it just makes them deeper, and it makes them more versatile in theory if they were all, if they could all start hitting. They just haven't hit, and then he'd be a fine cog in a good lineup. Right now, I think people are expecting him to be like this Ryan Howard.
Yes, well, it's kind of the Odubel thing, right? In that, for years, people just expected so much out of this guy because he's the only good player on the team. And I think that's kind of led to the general way people always give the guy so much crap for everything he does, because for years that's what they did, or for 2-3 years, whatever, because he was the only guy anyone cared about on the team. So they picked him apart far more than they should have. And I think that's carried over to now in the way that people are never really happy with Odubel.
I feel like people really are never happy with baseball teams in general.
True.
Like, it's weird because, like we on the High Hopes podcast, we try to be, like, fun and excited about the team. And just the majority of baseball fans that I've talked to are mostly just like, this guy sucks, bullpen's terrible, no one can hit. It's weird. It's really weird. I've thought a lot about the philosophy of the baseball fan in the last couple of weeks. And, like, it's just never positive. It's just always the manager sucks. And, like, it's weird because now we're getting to the point of the season where guys are settling into roles and, like, the bullpen's going to blow. Like, there's just stereotypes about this team already. And I think people still think the stereotype is that Carlos Santana was a bad signing. And I just don't understand why. It's not like they're blocking, like, Andrew Benintendi or Bryce Harper from playing right field. Like, it's Nick Williams or Aaron Altair. Like, it's fine. Just wait until Adam Haseley comes up in a couple months, I hope. I don't know. It's just like, it was weird. The anti-Carlos Santana thing is just, I was just really surprised by it.
You should have said my son, Adam Haseley. I'm shocked you didn't bust that one out. Jack's child, Adam Haseley, for those who didn't know.
No, he's not my child. He's Andrew Benintendi 2.0.
You think he's better looking than Benintendi, which is a bad take by you.
Of course he's better looking than Benintendi.
It's crazy talk. All right, we don't have a lot of time left. Jack, real quick, we mentioned him before, but in passing, I wanted to get your take on Eflin real quick because, I mean, for what it's worth, this team is 2-7 in June. Zach Eflin is 2-0 in June. So there's something there. But he has looked better. I think if you want to look for something, a positive sign, the strikeout rate is higher. I know Kapler talked about having Eflin go back and look at the swings and misses he's gotten and seeing if there's any sort of pattern there. And he has had a higher swing and miss rate this year as well. Is there anything you're seeing from Eflin that makes you a little more bullish than you've been in the past?
Well, I've said on previous podcasts that I was higher on Eflin than most, just because, like, I saw him starting to spot 95 on both sides of the plate, which we had never really seen from him before. And then he got hit around a little bit, and you know, a lot of that had to do with him not being able to locate like he was. I'm fine with Eflin. I just don't know how sustainable it is because his off speed is not very good at all. Like, with Pivetta last year, it was, this guy throws hard, and he has a wicked, wicked slider, so you can see it developing into something. With Eflin, I don't really see the off-speed as much. Now, he could be good for a couple starts because his fastball is 95, and it's climbed both sides of the plate, and he's just hard to square up. But for me to really, really get excited about him, I need to see sharper breakthrough his off-speed stuff and maybe a changeup or something in there. Now, I'm not giving up on him. I'm not fully, fully bought in.
Yeah, he's
fine.
I feel exactly the same way. He's a fifth starter. I love the increased velocity. The swings and misses are great, but I need to see Zach Eflin do it for a season before I'm actually going to believe he's anything more than that. And look, even what we've seen, you know, his best outing this past one, 9 strikeouts, he looked great. The outing before, he struck out 2 guys. So let's not get too carried away. Even though they won the game, I'm with you. We haven't seen a consistency. And like you said, you've said many times, there is a big difference between increased velocity and having a fastball that moves. And in any situation, you're taking the fastball that moves, and Zach Eflin's fastball, no matter how fast it's coming in there, doesn't seem to move too much. Jack, one other thing I want to get into before we get out of here. The All-Star voting has come out, and it looks like no Phillies are starting the All-Star game. I think that we could say that pretty safely. Odubel Herrera, the only one even on the sheet, he is the 9th highest-ranked outfielder. Obviously, that's fan voting, all that type of stuff. Who really cares about that? But when you look at this team, Jack, from that perspective, Aaron Nola, Odubel Herrera, is there anyone else who, with a hot month and a half, you think has a chance to be playing in the All-Star game?
They're Anthony Dominguez.
Boom.
Put him in the All-Star game. He's only allowed 1 run. Like, how do you not put him in the All-Star game?
Well, here's the thing. If they really cared about winning All-Star games, that's what they would do. The manager would have Josh Hader on the staff. You'd have Sir Anthony Dominguez on the staff. You'd have the Kirby Yates, whoever it is. You have these guys.
Archie Bradley.
Guys who get outs in the middle of a game. A game that is a bullpen game, essentially. You would think they would go that direction. We haven't seen that nearly enough. I think Hader makes it, though, having one of the better reliever seasons we've seen in a long time. And we'll get to see more Josh Hader this weekend. All right, Jack, before we get out of here, as Vince Quinn is literally staring at me through the window of the studio. No, I'm kidding, he's not. Vince waiting patiently to use the studio after us. But we're taking a little extra time because we love the High Hopes listeners way more than we love Vince Quinn. So
much like baseball, there's no time limit on the High Hopes podcast.
I love it. I love it. All right, Jack, before we get out of here, quickly, looking ahead, and we will be back before the weekend series against the Brewers. So let's focus off day today on Monday, but then big series the next 3 games with the Rockies coming to town. The one thing you have been able to count on for the most part, 20-11 at home, the Phillies still a good home team. How do you feel about this series? It's Aaron Nola versus John Gray tomorrow. Tyler Anderson on the hill against Nick Pivetta on Wednesday. And then Thursday, I believe, German Marquez against the aforementioned Zach Eflin. What do you think about those matchups?
Ooh, I like German Marquez. That'll be fun.
I'm interested
in that. Rockies have what? They're second in the NL West or first in the NL West?
They are now 3rd, I believe, maybe even 4th, as the NL West has had a lot of shakeup. Every single team is within 3 games of each other, but pretty sure the Giants and the Dodgers both passed them. As it is, the Rockies are 1 game under 500.
Yeah, it's a big series. It's a big series for sure. The Rockies, obviously, they have a pretty potent offense, per usual. But their staff, I guess the pitching matchup this weekend should definitely, or this week, should favor us. John Gray should be so much better.
And oh, like, my God, he's so good, and he just can't put it together. The talent is all there.
He could be like the center guard of the West, but he just doesn't do it.
Yep. And it's funny, too, because you look at his splits, it's not a pitching and Coors thing. He actually, at least recently, has pitched better at Coors, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. But, yeah, no, it's a really, really important series. Get back on track. They've been a pretty good home team. And, unfortunately, we're probably not going to have great crowds because everyone's so mad at the team. But hopefully they can stabilize a little bit. And I'm mad we're not seeing Kyle Freeland. I wanted to see what he looked like. I like Kyle Freeland, theoretically. But, yeah, no, important series. Interested to see how they pitch Charlie Blackman because he seems like he's really impossible to get out.
Yeah, and Nolan Arenado, that guy's all right too.
Yeah, he's okay. He's okay.
I'm with you. A good matchup here. Tyler Anderson, the one guy you didn't mention. I think he's a much better pitcher than his numbers show, but he is certainly very beatable. I think these are 3 matchups the Phillies can win. And, you know, granted, we've been saying this the last 2 series, coming in and saying, oh, well, they got the pitching matchup except when Eflin's on the hill, and they win the 2 games Eflin's on the hill and lose the rest. So who the hell knows when it comes to that?
Yeah, Nola versus Arenado and Blackman will be cool.
That'll be really cool. And look, this is a spot where, granted, they won the last game of the Milwaukee series, but we talk a lot about Nola as a stopper, as a guy to go out and be that ace and give them a gem when they need it. This team hasn't won 2 games in a row in a while. They've not won a series in a while. they need Aaron Nola to go out and get them off on the right foot in this home series against the Rockies, especially before they head out to Milwaukee for the weekend. So a huge, huge series here in the middle of June. Jack, final thoughts before we cede the studio.
Well, I only tweeted like 3 times about the Phillies over the last 4 days, so I'm sorry about that. But I'm back now. I won't be all in on.
Did you hear that sigh? You could even hear the listeners. You could hear the sigh of relief that was coming.
Yeah, they were clearly worried.
Oh, thank God! Yes,
they were clearly worried. So don't worry, I'm back. I will be watching every night once again. But yeah, no, it's important series. Please get on back on track and just figure out your crap. All right, I can't take the defense anymore. It really makes me so mad. Like, your major league players, play like it.
Yeah, I will second that. I will also, since Jack Fritz took his time to be very egocentric and talk about his Twitter account, I'll do what Jack normally does with my final thought. Rate and review the podcast, please. It makes such a difference for us. Let us know what we are doing right, what we're doing wrong. If you like it, hate it, whatever it is, just leave a review, rate it. It also makes it a lot easier for people to find in iTunes and all that stuff. So for Jack, for me, for John, please, please, please just give us a rate and review on there. It will really go a long way. So for the returned to Twitter, Jack Fritz, make sure you check out those tweets. Again, everyone, that's really the big takeaway from this podcast. Jack Fritz back, and we'll be tweeting about the Phillies. That's all that matters. We'll be back. We'll be back coming your way again later this week. We'll preview the Brewers series. But for now, it's time for the Phillies to go out and take care of the Rockies. So hopefully we'll be talking about at least a series win, hopefully a series sweep later this week. Either way, we'll be there. And again, rate and review the podcast. For Jack Fritz, for the absent John Marks, I'm James Seltzer. We'll see you guys soon.